Thank you. So it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak at this celebration of Stanley Mandelstam. I'm very pleased to be able to do that. So I was a graduate student in Berkeley for the four-year period from 1962 to 66, the same period that David Gross was reminiscing about. And it was an exciting time to be there, both scientifically and politically. My advisor was Jeffrey Chu, but Stanley Mandelstam was also very important in my education. So, for example, I took the same quantum field theory course that David mentioned from Stanley, and I'm glad I did. At the end of the first semester, Stanley gave a very difficult written exam, and I was quite upset after that I had done very poorly. And so to work off my feelings, I went and climbed a mountain that same afternoon. As it turned out, I actually had the second highest score on the test, even though I missed a lot of the problems. David Gross was the first. So Jeff Chu was skeptical about the possibility of quantum field theory describing the strong interactions, and on occasion would even suggest that it wasn't a good idea to study quantum field theory, that somehow you would be corrupted by it. So I'm glad that I wasn't, even though I was swayed to a considerable degree by Jeff, I'm glad I wasn't swayed so much as to be deprived out of this course from Stanley, which was so valuable. So I'm not going to say much about Stanley and his work because it's been covered by the other speakers, but I just want to mention some of the things that have impressed me over the years and his work. There was the early work that you've heard about on double dispersion relations or the Mandelstam representation. No one here has discussed his work on Reg A cuts, which was also important. In fact, I saw a paper just within the last week or so, which refers to this and seems to be making significant use of it. So that also, David mentioned that the Mandelstam representation is coming back recently, and I think the same is true of Reg A cuts. His work on light cone superspace and the finiteness of the N equal 4 super-Yang-Mills theory was very impressive. His calculation of the fermion-fermion scattering in the RNS model, well, it was quite remarkable. Independently, I was involved in some work that got the same results, and our method was very cumbersome, and I was impressed how simply and elegantly Stanley was able to achieve the right answer. And you've also heard about the interacting string picture in the light cone gauge, discussed in particular by Charles Thorne. So let me go on. Okay, since people have already discussed these things, I won't say more. And so what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about gauge string duality, also known as ADS-CFT duality. And I have to apologize that quite a few of you have heard me speak on this before. And what I will say is an abridged version of many of you have already heard. So just to remind you of the context in the famous Maldacena paper, he gives three maximally supersymmetric examples of dualities. One is between M theory on ADS 4 times S7 and the maximally supersymmetric conformal field theory in three dimensions. This is a duality that would be associated with M2 brains. Then in the type 2B superstring theory, there's a duality between that theory on ADS 5 times S5 and the famous N equal 4 super-Yang-Mills theory in four dimensions. That's the duality associated with D3 brains. And finally, there's one associated with M5 brains, which is M theory on ADS 7 times S4, which should be dual to some maximally supersymmetric conformal field theory in six dimensions. Now, The case involving the D3 brains in type 2B is by far the example that's been most studied and best understood. And the basic fact there is that if you work in the planar approximation, which means fixed at hoof coupling in the gauge theory and large N, that SUN N equal 4 super Yang-Mills theory in that approximation is believed to be given by an integrable spin chain model. And in the dual description in terms of type 2B superstring theory, in the ADS5 times S5 background, planar approximation corresponds to the tree approximation in the string description, and that's given apparently by an integrable world sheet action. So this duality is relating to integrable models, and all you have to do is to show that they're the same. And this hasn't been fully done, completed as far as I know, but as a result of a great deal of ingenious work by many people, the equivalence of these two integrable theories has been largely, but not completely, demonstrated. Now, in the case of the two M-theory dualities, the story is tougher. And it's tougher on both sides of the story. First of all, M-theory is less well understood than type 2B superstring theory. Superstring theory has the advantage that there is a perturbation expansion, which you don't have in M-theory. So that makes it more elusive. And then in terms of the dual superconformal field theories, the N equal 4 super Yang-Mills theory has been understood and studied for a long time, whereas the dual superconformal field theories in three dimensions and six dimensions are much more elusive. But within the past year or so, there's been a great deal of progress in formulating the three-dimensional superconformal field theory that's dual to M theory on ADS 4 times S 7, as well as certain orbifold generalizations of that geometry. And so that's the work that I will briefly summarize in the remainder of my talk. So I got interested in this problem a few years ago and wrote a paper in which I proposed that these three-dimensional superconformal field theories that would be dual to M-theory on ADS4 times some compact seven-dimensional space, such as a seven-sphere, that these conformal field theories should be gauge theories in which the Yang-Mills fields appear in Chern-Simons terms. Reason for that is simply that these are terms that have dimension 3, which is what you want for a scale invariant theory. And as here I just remind you what a Chern-Simons term is. It's a 3 form whose exterior derivative gives you a trace of f wedge f, and then it has a coefficient k, which is called the level of the Chern-Simons term. And now, since we only want terms with dimension 3, we don't want a kinetic term for the gauge field. So there's no trace F squared like you would ordinarily have in a Yang-Mills theory, because that would be dimension 4 and would mess up the scale invariance. This requirement of not having the kinetic term also affects the counting of degrees of freedom, and it does it in a way that it's desirable, because the bosons and the effect of this is that the gauge fields will not add degrees of freedom to the counting at all, but there will be an equal number of bosons and fermions coming just from spin zero and spin a half field. So in the case of maximal supersymmetry, where the compact seven-dimensional space is a seven-sphere, the matter fields consist of scalars called x and spinners psi, which belong to eight-dimensional representations of the spin 8 R symmetry group. And just by counting of dimensions, you can see that the scalar field X should have dimension half, just so that the kinetic term is dimension 3. And in the case of the Fermi field, it should have dimension 1, so that its kinetic term is dimension 3. And in having that, you can see that terms of the form X squared psi squared or X to the sixth would also be dimension 3. So this is very schematic without any indices or coefficients or anything. So those are the types of terms that one has in these theories in addition to the Chern-Simons term. So even though this proposal I was making turned out to be on the right track, I didn't actually succeed in finding any superconformal field theories with maximal supersymmetry, which was the goal I was trying to achieve. And my mistake was that I assumed that the gauge group should be SUN and the matter should belong to adjoint, and these assumptions were based on analogy with N equal 4 super Yang nils. And that just turns out not to be the way that things work in this case. And there aren't any constructions like that that would give maximal supersymmetry. So the floodgates opened following a breakthrough in November of 2007 by Bagger and Lambert and Gustafson. They found a model, which I'll describe briefly, which does have N equal 8 supersymmetry, but it turns out to have a rather mysterious relationship to M theory, and it's not really clear what its physical interpretation is. But the definitive paper on the subject was then written somewhat later, in last June, by Aharoni, Bergman, Jaffris, and Maldacena. And so that will be referred to as the ABJM, which is by now the standard reference on the subject. Well, let me start with the BLG construction. As has already been mentioned earlier, the way the counting of dimensions works makes it natural to introduce a generalization of a Lie algebra called a 3 algebra, in which you combine 3 generators to make a generator. And so this is the analog of a Lie bracket, just with 3 entries rather than 2. And so your structure constants have 4 indices, 3 up and 1 down. And then this bracket is required to satisfy a generalization of the Jacobi identity, which I didn't bother to write down. It's straightforward. And in addition, you require that there should be a metric, HAB, which can be used to raise the indices or lower them if you use the inverse. And the structure constants with 4 indices up are required to have total anti-symmetry. If these rules are satisfied, then by the construction that these people give, you can write down an N equal 8 superconformal field theory, because these are all the ingredients that go into it. But then there was a theorem proved by these people. I had conjectured it with my students previously, but these people proved it. And that there is a unique non-trivial 3 algebra with positive definite metric. So the set of rules I just gave you, if you require that the metric should be positive definite, gives a unique non-trivial solution which has 4 generators. So in this unique solution, in a convenient choice of basis, the structure constants are just given by the epsilon symbol, and the metric is just given by the Kronecker delta. So this BLG construction, this is the only other solution besides this one is a free theory. So this theory, but with 4 generators, gives a theory that has SO4 gauge symmetry. And so it's a non-trivial interacting theory with SO4 gauge symmetry. Now, if you write SO4 as SU2 times SU2, you can think of it that way. And that turns out to be interesting because according to the way they construct the Chern-Simons term, you find out that the Chern-Simons terms for the two SU2s enter in with opposite signs. So they both have level k, but one of them is k and the other is minus k. And that relative minus sign in the two Chern-Simons terms is important because it results in the theory being parity invariant. See, normally a Chern-Simons term has an epsilon symbol in it, so you say it's parity odd. But if you combine the spatial reflection with interchange of the two SU2 groups and define that as a parity operation, then that's a symmetry which can be interpreted as parity. So that's important if you want to have a duality to M theory, because we know that the M-theory dual of these things should be parity conserving. The other remark is that the only parameter in this theory is the coupling constant, G squared, which is just 1 over the Chern-Simons level. So these theories are classical or semi-classical when K is large, but otherwise they are very quantum. Now, because of this uniqueness theorem I mentioned, a bunch of groups tried to evade this uniqueness theorem by considering 3 algebras in which the metric HAB that I introduced was not positive definite. but was allowed to have a negative eigenvalue. And it turns out, in these three different groups working independently and wrote their papers all within a day or two of each other, all came to the same conclusion, which is that there's a nice Lorentzian three algebra construction which embeds an ordinary Lie algebra G. So you have a set of generators which are just those of an ordinary Lie algebra, and you add two more generators, which one of the groups call T plus and T minus, and then three algebra structure constants are related to the Lie algebra structure constants by this, and all the other non-zero components of these three algebra structure constants are related to this one just by permuting and raising and lowering indices. The other piece of information you need to complete the description here is the formula for the metric, and so the Lie algebra part just has a Kronecker delta metric, and then here this is just a light cone type of thing. So you can see there's one positive and one negative eigenvalue. Now, the negative eigenvalue wasn't initially considered because it has the obvious shortcoming. Namely, it means that the theory contains ghost degrees of freedom. Certain kinetic terms enter with a minus sign. Namely, those kinetic terms associated with the negative eigenvalue enter with a minus sign and represent ghost degrees of freedom, which makes the theory unsatisfactory. So shortly after these papers appeared, my students and I suggested modifying this Lorentzian theory by taking certain global symmetries that one of the groups had pointed out, and these global symmetries were simply shifts in these components of these scalar and spinner fields, and gauging these symmetries, and which turns out you can do while maintaining all of the superconformal symmetry. And so by gauging these symmetries, one removes the ghost degrees of freedom. So you can go to a gauge where they simply drop out after you've done this. So I'm not going to show you the technical details, but that's the idea. But by the time you do that, something very strange happens. And that is, there's another field called X plus that survives in the theory. And its equation of motion tells you simply that it's a constant. So when you set it equal to that constant, you're forced. So you set it equal to a constant, but that constant has to have dimension 1/2 because X itself does. So in that way, you introduce a scale into the theory. And once you introduce that scale, you're no longer left with a scale invariant theory. And in fact, you just integrate out certain stuff and do some straightforward manipulations. And it turns out you're left with precisely n equal 8 super Yang-Mills theory in three dimensions. And the scale you introduced as the VEV of this field X plus is precisely the coupling constant of the three-dimensional Yang-Mills theory, which does have dimension 1/2. This is certainly correct because the theories we want are closely connected to n equal 8 super Yang-Mills theory in three dimensions. But nonetheless, it's a disappointing answer because the conformal theory one wanted to describe is the infrared fixed point associated with this coupling constant going to infinity, but one ends up with a coupling constant at some finite point, not at infinity. So one's actually just going around in a big circle, and you're sort of back where you started. So it's work that's correct, but nonetheless disappointing. Okay. So that's where things stood for about a week. But before I tell you what happened after that, I should remark on the orbifold interpretation of the BLG theory. So the BLG theory had gauge group SO4, and it had a level K for the Chern-Simons term. So SO4 is rank 2, so these people suggested it should describe two M2 brains. But that still left open the question, what is the level K? What is K? And they suggested that K described an orbifolding in the theory, that you had a C4 mod ZK orbifold singularity. So you had two brains at an orbifold singularity. So So this work had a lot of things that were right about it. And it was, they had the right idea, but they applied it to the wrong theory. But the problem was they didn't know yet the right theory, because that appeared later. The reason it's the wrong theory is that if you start with M theory and do this kind of orbifolding, you can equivalently think of orbifolding the seventh sphere by ZK. So you can think of seventh sphere is embedded in C4, just as a unit sphere. So when you do that orbifolding, it's easy to see in M theory that breaks the SO8 R symmetry down to SO6 R symmetry, and associated to that, it breaks the supersymmetry down from N equal 8 to N equal 6. So this kind of orbifolding of M theory is only going to preserve 3/4 of the supersymmetry, at least when K is greater than 2. And so the same should be required for the dual superconformal field theory. But the BLG theory had N equal 8 for all values of K. So there's a contradiction there. So what one really wants is a superconformal field theory that only has N equals 6. And that's what was constructed by ABJM in the work that appeared about a week after the other work I was mentioning. And what they did was clearly the right answer. And so they constructed N equals 6 superconformal Chern-Simons theories, the same structures I was showing you earlier, with the scalars and spinners and the types of interactions and the Chern-Simons terms and so forth. It's all the same thing. Also, the two gauge groups, the level comes in with opposite sign again, so that one has parity invariance, just as I was describing before. But now, just as in all these ADS CFT stories, the N corresponds to the number of flux units on the sphere, except now we're orbifolding the sphere by ZK, so it's the number of flux units on this orbifolded sphere. So the dual picture is that we have M theory on ADS4 times S7 mod ZK. We have 3/4 maximal supersymmetry. The dual superconformal field theory has UN times UN gauge symmetry, and the matter fields, the scalars and spinners, are bifundamental in these two unitary groups, not adjoint. So following the appearance of the ABJM paper, my students and I made a minor contribution. I mean, they did the important work, because what ABJM had done was to show that their field theory had the N equals 6 supersymmetry and the scale invariance, but they hadn't really proved the full superconformal symmetry. But their theory does have it, and we were able to show that explicitly. Another important thing that ABJM point out is that you can represent S7 as an S1 bundle over CP3. That's a well-known construction. And when you do that, this orbifolding, which mods out by ZK, can be thought of as just acting on the fiber circle. And so the effect of the orbifolding is to reduce the radius of the circle by a factor of K, so that if the radius of curvature of the ADS space is R, then the radius of this orbifolded circle is just R over K. And that's important because M theory compactified on a circle can be interpreted as type 2A superstring theory, where the string coupling constant of the type 2A string scales as the 3/2 power of the radius of the circle. This is if you're familiar without the 3/2, it's a question of what units you're measuring it in. And this is a correct statement when you measure in 11-dimensional Planck units. If you measure in string units, it would be without the 3/2 there. But in Planck units, this is the scaling. So the effect of this is that when K is large, you can make this circle arbitrarily small, and then you're going to be dealing with perturbative type 2A string theory. So the precise statement is that if K is much larger than n to the 1/5, is the way it works out, that then you have weakly coupled type 2A string theory on ADS4 times CP3. And it's also nice sometimes to be able to use a supergravity approximation to the string theory, and that will be valid if one also has this inequality, n greater than k, which makes the, is what you need. And this is compatible with this. So there are regions of parameters where you have both of those. This ABGM superconformal field theory has two integer parameters now. It has n, the rank of the gauge group, and k, the level of the Chern-Simons. And remember that 1 over k is like g squared in gauge theory. It's the coupling. And so they can define an Itouf parameter, n over k. So it's like the usual g squared n that you're familiar with in four-dimensional gauge theory. And in fact, it works the same way, that you can define a planar approximation and given by large n at fixed lambda. And then the subsequent inverse powers of n will give you the higher genus, the corrections to that. So it has the usual topological interpretation. So this works exactly like the familiar story in four dimensions, with this ratio being the Itouf parameter. The curious thing about the Itouf parameter in these theories is that it's rational, whereas in four dimensions, of course, it's real, not just rational. So just as in the case of ADS5, CFT4, the large N superconformal field theory is weakly coupled for small lambda, and stringy effects of the ADS theory are suppressed for large lambda. So as before, small lambda is easy to study in the field theory, and large lambda is easy to study in the string theory. There are various related dualities that were studied by a group of Koreans, most of whom are named Lee, and which is a contradiction to what someone said earlier, that most Koreans are named Kim. So they generalize what I described, where you can have unitary groups with different rank, M and N. And this arises when you introduce another kind of flux into the problem besides the usual five-form flux. Still preserves N equals 6. And then there's this further class of constructions that only have N equal 5, which are based on products of orthogonal groups and symplectic groups. And all of these things have nice M-theory interpretations, which were studied by three of the four authors of ABJM. It turns out they did this work when M was off in India. So that's why it's the three of them. So this is a nice story for the generalization of these cases. So I want to keep things brief. I think we've had a long day. So let me just conclude that various n equal 5 and n equal 6 three-dimensional superconformal field theories with k much larger than n to the 1/5 are dual to weakly coupled type 2a superstring theory on ADS4 times CP3 with appropriate fluxes. And just as in the case of ADS5 CFT4, it is plausible that these superconformal field theories are exactly solvable or integrable for all lambda in the planar limit, and that the dual superstring world sheet theories are also integrable or solvable. And there's quite a bit of evidence to that effect. There are people in the audience here who know more about it than I do. And all the technology that's been developed in studying this case is now being applied here. And I think there's still some unresolved issues, but it looks like it's going to be a nice analog of the other case with some new issues arising. So let me just conclude by saying happy birthday, Stanley. I haven't looked into that. I realize that that's 3/4 of 32. So that's where it would come from. But beyond that, I don't have anything more to say. Maybe there's someone in the audience who say more, but I don't know it.